Welcome to Pardes Daily, where you get your daily dose of Torah with Pardes faculty. This month, Pardes is bringing Elul to you. Let's dive in.
Hello, everyone. This is Tzvi Hirschfield. Again, learning some Talmud with you. We are on page 30A, Lamed Amud Aleph. We're actually going to start from the very bottom of Chavtet Amud Bet. We are still in the fourth chapter of Rosh Hashanah. I'm here sitting in the lovely Pardes Institute learning with you today. So the Mishnah told us that the Amrulo and the Seif of the Mishnah, the last part of the Mishnah, that whether it was Yavna, whether it was any place else that had a Beit Din, one could blow shofar on Shabbat. That was the Takana. That was the enactment of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. And so the Mishnah said, Amrulo echad Yavna vecha kol makom sheisho Beit Din, right? That the final opinion in the Mishnah said that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's Takana included Yavna and any place that had a Beit Din. Amar Rav Huna ve'im Beit Din. Rav Huna emphasized this takana of Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai meant it had to be done, the shofar blowing on Shabbat had to be done with Beit Din. So, of course, the Gemara wants to explore my ve'im Beit Din. What does that mean, with Beit Din? And the answer that gives, bifnei Beit Din, in front of Beit Din, meaning that any shofar blowing that took place on Rosh Hashanah fell out on Shabbat had to happen in front, in the place where the Beit Din was sitting. This is to exclude a case where if you were not in front of Beit Din, you could not. That meant if one was in a town where there was a Beit Din, Rosh Hashanah, and it's Shabbat, shofar blowing could only take place in front of the Beit Din itself, presumably to safeguard against people carrying their shofar on Shabbat or violating Shabbat in some other way. Mativ Rava. Rava questioned this understanding of Rav Huna. The Ode Zot Haita Yerushalayim Yitera'al Yavna. He quoted from the Mishnah that said, and this is also something extra that Yerushalayim had over Yavna. Yerushalayim, when the Mikdash stood, had something that Yavna, even after the Takana, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai had. And what is it? Ilei Mabiktani Zot Mibayalei. If you want to say that it's what was taught, that the Yerushalayim you could blow even if you were in the suburbs, as long as you could see it, or you were at hearing distance of Yerushalayim, whereas in Yavna you had to be inside the city itself. He points out, Zot Mibayle, it shouldn't have said the Od Zot, it should have said Zot, this is the thing. Rav is suggesting that the Va'od Zot language implies that not only was the difference in terms of the suburbs, but there's another difference. Ella, what's the other difference? Yerushalayim tokin yechidin uv'yavna ein tokin yechidin. So you throw out the idea that in Yerushalayim, even individuals could blow on their own, whereas in Yavna, individuals were not allowed to blow. Uv'yavna ein tokin yechidin, and in Yavna, individuals were not allowed to blow. V'haki ata Rav Yitzchak bar Yosef amar, kol mesayim, ki mesayim shlicha de tzipur at tkiya biyavna lo shama inish kol une mikal tkiyata biyachidai. But we know that Rav Yitzchak came and reported the following, that when the shliach tzibur, when the chazan finished blowing the shofar in Yavna, a person could not even hear their a voice in their own ear from all the individual tkiyot that were being blown. Implying or telling us that individuals indeed did blow the shofar in Yavna. It wasn't just the shliach tzibur in front of the Beit Din. El alav, di Yerushalayim tokin bein bizman Beit Din vein shelo bizman Beit Din. Uv Yavna bizman Beit Din in shelo bizman Beit Din lo. Rather, it must be, Rava suggests, the difference between Yerushalayim and Yavna is in Yerushalayim you could blow any time during the day, any individual wanted to blow, and in Yavna only during the time from morning until about noon when Beit Din sat. If it was not when Beit Din was sitting, you couldn't. Now comes the diuk. Ha bisman Beit Din miyatokin. Vafilu shelo bifnei Beit Din. So Rava is saying, therefore you can see the Mishnah is implying, or we can infer from the Mishnah, that as long as Beit Din was in session, even individuals who are not in front of Beit Din could blow. You did not have to be in front of Beit Din, which is not what Rav Huna said. Rav Huna said you had to be in front of Beit Din. So the answer here, which is not difficult to anticipate, is lo. Deal Yerushalayim, tokin bein bifnei Beit Din, bein shlo bifnei Beit Din, uv'yavna bifnei Beit Din, in shlo bifnei Beit Din, lo. No, brother, not the way you interpret. Rather, in Yerushalayim, you could blow shofar, whether Beit Din, whether you were in front of Beit Din or not in front of Beit Din, but in Yavna, you had to be in front of Beit Din, and if you weren't in front of Beit Din, you could not. Ika dematne leid Rav Huna aha. There are those who attach Rav Huna's teaching about ve'im beit din to a different context with a slightly different meaning. And now we're going to turn towards the shofar blowing that would happen on Yom Kippur of a Yovel year. Dichtiv b'yom ha-kippurim taviru shofar b'chol artzachem. The Torah tells us that on Yom Kippur of a Yovel year, you should make the shofar sound throughout the land. Milamed shekol yachid v'yachid chayav litkoa. That every individual has to blow shofar on Yom Kippur, which has the same din of Shabbat, by the way, which is why it's connected. Every individual had to blow shofar on Yom Kippur of a Yovel year. Amar Rav Huna, the im beit din. So here, they were attaching Rav Huna's statement. That's only with beit din, but now we have a slightly different diuk. My ve'im beit din, what does ve'im beit din mean? Bizman beit din. Unlike Rav Huna's statement above, that im beit din meant bifnei beit din, here we are saying two things. First, Rav Huna's statement was going on the shofar blowing of the Yovel year on Yom Kippur. And number two, that im beit din meant bizman beit din, as long as beit din was in session, but not necessarily in the same room or the same building as beit din, lafuke shelo bizman beit din telo, to exclude the case where one was outside the time frame of beit din, like in the afternoon, and therefore they could not blow shofar. Mativ Rava, again we have an attack of Rava onto the statement of Rav Huna from a Abraita. Tkiat Rosh Hashanah v'yovel dochat ha-shabbat b'gbulin ish u'beito. Shofar blowing on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur of the Yovel year overcomes Shabbat outside of the Mikdash. Ish u'beito. Presumably the Braita is referring to a case after the Takana of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, saying that even on Shabbat in Gvulin, one blows shofar, ish u'beito, a man in his household. My ish u'beito. What does ish u'beito mean? Ilema ish v'ishto. If you want to say it means a man and his wife, itata mi michaiva, a woman, when is she obligated? The ha mitzvata seishas man gramahi, the whole mitzvata seishas man gramahi nashim p'turot. It, shofar is in fact a time-bound commandment, and as in all other time-bound commandments, women are exempt. So beito can't come to mean his wife, elav ish beveito. A man can blow shofar in his home, Vafilu shelo bisman beit din, even when beit din is not meeting, and that would be the challenge to Rav Huna's position. Answer, lo la'olam bisman beit din. No, it just meant a man can blow in his own home as long as it is the same time frame of when beit din is sitting. So as long as beit din is meeting, the Meiri says, if beit din is sitting and meeting, people feel more watched, more supervised, or less likely to break the rules. Now we're going to have Rav Sheshet bring a challenge to Rav Huna's statement. Again, Rav Huna's statement was referring to, in this version, referring to the Yovel year, shofar blowing on the Yovel year, Yom Kippur of the Yovel year. And he said one could only blow shofar as an individual, bizman beit din, when beit din was still in session, which would be about from morning until midday. Mativ Rav Sheshet. Shava ha-Yovel l'Rosh Hashanah l'Tkiyah l'Brachot. Ela shebe yovel tokin bein beveit din shekichu bo atachodesh uvein beveit din shelo kichu atachodesh. The chol yachid yachid chayav litkoas. So the Braita begins as follows. Yovel and Rosh Hashanah are the same for shofar blowing and for brachot. But in a Yovel year, a Yom Kippur of a Yovel year, one blows shofar in front of a beit din, whether or not that beit din is a samuch beit din, a beit din that is empowered to determine the calendar months, or a beit din that's not empowered to determine calendar months. And not only that, kol yachid v'yachid chayav litkoa, every individual has an obligation to blow shofar on Yom Kippur of the Yovel year. Now, in contrast to that, uva Rosh Hashanah lo ayu tokin elu beit din, shekichu bo atachodesh, when it comes to Rosh Hashanah and it's Shabbat, they would only blow shofar in a beit din that was musmach, that was empowered to determine the calendar. And individuals were not obligated to blow. Now comes the diuk to bring the challenge. My ein kol yachid v'yachid chayav litkoa. What does it mean to say individuals were not obligated to blow shofar? Ilema debi yovel tokin yachidin Rosh Hashanah ein tokin yachidin. If you want to say that means in a Yovel year, individuals would blow, but Rosh Hashanah, when it fell out on Shabbat, individuals would not blow. V'ha, ki ata Rav Yitzchak Bar Yosef Amar, we have this statement we quoted above, when Rav Yitzchak Bar Yosef came and he taught, ki havi mesayim shlicha de sipur tegata b'yav ve'lo shama inish kol une mikal tegat yechidai. Didn't he teach that when the Shliach Tzibur had finished blowing shofar on Yavne, a person couldn't hear, really, the expression probably the sound of his own voice, couldn't hear any sound in his ear because of all the shofar blasts of individuals going on? Elalav, it must mean the following. Dil beyovel tokin bein bizman beitin uvein shelo bizman beitin, uvrosh shana bizman beitin in shelo bizman beitin. Low. Doesn't the statement come to teach, rather, that in a Yovel year, Yom Kippur of a Yovel year, people can blow shofar, whether Beit Din is meeting or it's a time when Beit Din is not meeting, like in the afternoon. And Rosh Hashanah, at a time when Beit Din was meeting, they could blow. And at a time when Beit Din was not meeting, they could not. And then he goes back, Tani Miyat, therefore, didn't the Braita not teach Bayovel Bain Bisman Beitin Uvein Shalo Bisman Beitin? And didn't the Braita, in effect, teach that one could blow on a Yovel year whether Beitin was meeting or not, which would then contradict Rav Huna's statement? Remember, Rav Huna's statement was, in a Yovel year on Yom Kippur, you could only blow shofar Bisman Beitin. Lo, the Gemara rejects this deal. The Olam Bisman Beitin, one could only blow in a Yovel year on Yom Kippur, at the time when Beit Din was meeting, v'hachiktani, and this is what the text of the Braita reads, v'yovel bizman shebeit din tokin bein bifnei Beit Din bein shlo bifnei Beit Din. And during a Yovel year, during the time Beit Din was meeting, one could blow shofar whether they were in front of Beit Din or not. Rosh Hashanah tokin bizman Beit Din uvifnei Beit Din. Rosh Hashanah, you really require both. It has to be at the time that Beit Din sits, and not only that, it actually had to be physically in front of them, which preserves Rav Huna's statement, or this version of Rav Huna's statement, that in a Yovel year, one still could only blow shofar during the time that Beit Din was meeting, but not in front of Beit Din. But in Rosh Hashanah, one had to be in front of Beit Din when they blew shofar on Shabbat, if Rosh Hashanah fell on Shabbat. Itmar Nami, we have another Amoraic statement that taught the following. Amar Rabbi Chiya Bar Gamda, Amar Rabbi Yossi Ben Shaul, Amar Rabbi. Ein tokin ela kolzman shebeit din yoshvin. We have a statement quoted in the name of Rabbi that one could not blow shofar except at a time when Beit Din was sitting. By Rabbi Zera, Rabbi Zera asked the question. Nin aru la'amod v'lo amdu mahu. What happens if they were getting ready to go up, meaning their time for judging had ended, but they still hadn't stood up and left the room? What's the halacha? Beit din yoshim ba'inan v'ha'ika. We require a sitting Beit Din, and basically they are still sitting because they haven't gotten up out of their chairs. Odil mazman Beit Din ba'inan v'leka. Or rather, we need a time when Beit Din is in session. And they're not in session. So how do we view that brief moment in time? Somebody runs in, wants to get a quick shofar blowing in, and Beit Din has already basically, well, they wouldn't use a gavel, but clapped their hand on the table and said, we're done, but had not stood up yet. Is that considered in front of Beit Din or not? Is that Zman Beit Din or not? Teku, we don't give an answer. Ta'amod is what that means. We leave the question in its place because we don't have an answer to that question. The ode, now going back to that last piece of the Mishnah, the ode zot haita Yerushalayim yitar liYavne, right? Yerushalayim had benefits over Yavne. And then the Mishnah gave certain examples. Ro'ah, why did the Mishnah mention that it had to be a city that could see Yerushalayim? Prat liYoshev benachal, to exclude a suburb that was in a valley and couldn't see the city. Shoma'at, why did it say they could hear Yerushalayim? Prat liYoshev Rosh Ahar, this is to exclude a village sitting on the top of a mountain, and they could not hear, even though they could see Yerushalayim because they were high up. Since they couldn't hear, they're considered too far away. And Krova, why did Mishnah say they had to be near? Prat liYoshev Chutz LeTchum, this is to include a settlement or a village that was more than 2,000 amot, like around a kilometer outside of Jerusalem, outside of the Tchum, where one could carry. V'yecholah lavo, why does it mention that it has to be a place that they could come to Jerusalem? Prat lemasik la'nara. This is to exclude a village that was near Yerushalayim, but a river or a lake or some body of water interrupted the path between them, and therefore a person could not travel and couldn't cross the river, and therefore they would not be included in the environs of Yerushalayim for the purpose of shofar blowing. So you have to be able to see the city, close enough to hear noise from the city, within 2,000 amot, and no barrier between you, so you could travel there on Chag and get there. Now we come to another Mishnah. Barishona haya lulav nital b'mikdash shival b'mendina yom echad. Originally, since the Torah says about the mitzvah of lulav, we're sort of continuing on with the theme of takanot over Yochanan ben Zakkai. Initially, a lulav was taken in the mikdash for 7 days, and outside the mikdash only for one, because the pasuk says uveyom harishon. Only on the first day of Sukkot you take the lulav, but then the pasuk finishes with v'samachna lifnei Hashem shiva yamim. You should be happy before God for 7 days. This was understood to mean that you would actually use your lulav in the mikdash. That's lifnei Hashem, before God, for all 7 days. So initially, 1 day outside the mikdash with your lulav and etrog, 7 days in the mikdash. Mishachar of Beit HaMikdash, after the destruction of the temple, hitkin Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai shelulav nital medina shiv'ah. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai made a takana, an enactment, that lulav should be taken all 7 days, even outside the mikdash. Zecher l'mikdash, so we're remembering the mikdash. And in addition, v'shiyeh yom haneif kulo asur. Now, yom haneif means the day the omer was brought. What's being referenced there is the Torah tells us that the new crop, the new grain, or at least the new barley grain, but really all new grains for that season, cannot be consumed until the Omer offering is brought on the 16th of Nisan, the first day of Chol HaMoed Pesach. Until that barley offering was brought, none of the new crop that had already grown in was permitted for use. It was all prohibited until the Omer offering. And after the destruction of the temple, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai decreed that one could not consume chadash, the new wheat, until after day 16 had ended. Okay, you had to wait until the entire day of the 16th was over, and then you could start enjoying your new crop. Uminaland avdin and zecher lemikdash. Now the Gemara begins. From where do we know that we should enact things or do things to remember the mikdash? De amar kra. It now quotes a pasuk from Yirmiyahu, which says as follows: Ki ale aruchalach umakotayich erpaech numashem ki nidachak rulach tzion. He doresh ein la, right? The pasuk says that Yerushalayim is wounded and hurt and set off, and because doresh ein la, there are none who seek her, implying miklal de bayadrisha, that we need to be doresh, we need to seek after Tzion, we have to remember the temple and long for it, and that is the purpose of his takana, to remember what happened at the mikdash, to instill longing for the mikdash. And now on the last clause, ishe yom aneif kulo asur, that the entire day of the first day of the Omer offering, chadash, the new crop, was prohibited. My time, what's the reason? Mehera yibane beit hamikdash, v'yomru eshtakad milo achanu be'ir mizrach, achshav nami nechol, v'lo yadei d'eshtakad lo'av ha'omer, Heir Mizrach Hitir. Hashtad Ika Omer, Omer Matir. So what's the reason we want to wait for the entire day of the 16th? Because, as we know, we hope quickly the temple will be rebuilt, and people will say, last year, didn't we eat the Chadash as soon as the sun rose? Because the understanding here is that without the Omer offering, on a biblical level, just the start of the day of the 16th, the sunrise, would be enough to make all the new crop permissible to eat. If the Mikdash is standing, you have to wait for the Omer offering, which would happen later in the morning. So what's our concern? The Mikdash will be rebuilt, and people say last year or the year before that, who knows how many years, we ate the Chadash, we ate the new produce, the new grain, just as soon as the sun rose on the 16th. So this year, too, we can do that. And they will not know that last year there was no Omer offering, and therefore the sunrise was sufficient to make the new grain permissible. Hashta the Ika Omer, now that there is an Omer offering, because the Mikdash has been rebuilt, Omer Matir, it's only the Omer that releases the new grain. And therefore, so we don't fall into that mistake, we wait the entire day of the 16th and only start eating the new produce on the night of the 17th. So now the Gemara wants to know, what's our concern here? Dimibani emat, when is the Mikdash going to be rebuilt? Ilema deibane b'shitasar, if the temple would be rebuilt on the 16th of Nisan, right? Harehi ir mizrachitir, no problem, because the rising of the sun on the morning of the 16th already made the Chadash permissible, because the Mikdash wasn't built until the daytime of the 16th. So by that time, the sun already rose. There was no Omer offering to bring, because the Mikdash wasn't built yet. It's still only going to be built a few hours from now. Therefore, no problem. You're allowed to eat the Chadash as soon as the sun rises, because there was no Mikdash yet. Ela dibane b'chamisa. Rather, the temple was rebuilt on the 15th. So now the Gemara asks, Michatzot hayom lahal nishtari. So then why did Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai decree against the entire day of the 16th? Let's just say that you can't eat the Omer, the new wheat from midday. Why only midday? Tahaditan ha-rechokin mutarin mechatzot hayom ulahalam nefishe ein beitin mit atzlimbo. The Mishnah said that people who live far away, or the Brita says, I should say, the people who live far away from Jerusalem, they could start eating their chadash, their new wheat or their new grain already from midday, because they could count on the fact that Beit Din would not delay it. They weren't lazy. They made sure that the Omer offering was brought in the morning. So already by midday, you could be rest assured the Omer offering was brought. So here too, make the decree that we have to wait until midday every year. So if the temple happens to be rebuilt on the 15th, we can be sure that by midday of the 16th, the Omer offering would be brought. So again, why would Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai tell us we have to wait the entire day of the 16th? Lo nitzrcha, no, we need it. De'ibane b'chamisar samuch l'shkiyat hachama. It was only, the temple is only rebuilt in the late afternoon, right before sunset on the 15th. So therefore, there would be no time to do the Omer. It would take a while. The temple was only rebuilt, and therefore it might take them the whole day the next day to get the Omer offering, get things up and running. Inami de ibane balaila, or it was built on the night of the 16th, and therefore again the entire day of the 16th it would take them to get things going and get the mikdash set up, and the Omer offering might only be brought at the end of the day on the 16th. So therefore, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said, we're going to wait every year till the beginning of the 17th of Nisan and wait and hold off on eating the new grain for the entire day of the 16th, just in case when the temple is rebuilt, it's not going to be rebuilt on too late in the day of the 15th. And therefore, we'll make a mistake and we'll think we can eat the new grain from the morning of the 16th, when in fact we have to wait until the Omer offering is brought. And maybe they won't get around to get to the Omer offering until later the day of the 16th, because the temple just came in overnight. Thank you for joining me. I look forward to learning more pages with you. And again, thanks.
Thank you to our Pardes faculty. And thank you to you, our learners. Make sure to check back in at the beginning of each week to stay on track with your Elul learning. And visit www.pardes.org.il for more information about Pardes and our programs.